I was standing in my kitchen when the email came through. Not loud, not dramatic, just a quiet ping that made my stomach tighten. I didn't open it right away. I already knew who it was from. I always do. The coffee was getting cold on the counter. The house was too clean, like I'd been waiting for something bad to happen. I remember thinking I should sit down before I read it. I didn't. He'd CC'd his lawyer again. That was new. I read the words twice, then a third time. They were polite, careful, almost friendly, but every sentence felt like it was pushing me into a corner I hadn't noticed was closing. I started counting things, bills, days, hours until pickup. I didn't reply. I just stared at the screen and felt something shift in me, not anger, not fear, something colder. That was the moment I realized we weren't arguing anymore. We were competing, and I didn't know the rules. I wake up before my alarm most mornings, not because I'm rested, because my body doesn't trust sleep anymore. I lie there and listen to the house, the hum of the fridge, the air conditioner kicking on, the silence that comes after. I used to reach for him without thinking. That reflex is gone now, but the empty space still feels shaped like something that used to breathe. I get up quietly, even though no one is asleep beside me. Old habits stick longer than love does. The kitchen light feels too bright. Everything in this house does. I keep it clean because mess feels like evidence. I don't know of what. Just that if things are out of place, it might mean I'm failing at something I don't fully understand yet. I make coffee I barely drink. I check my phone before I brush my teeth. I hate that about myself, but I do it anyway. I'm always afraid I'll miss something important, a message, a change, a deadline I didn't know I was supposed to meet. Most mornings, there's nothing. That almost feels worse. I scroll through old emails instead, threads that never really end, words that look neutral but carry weight if you read them enough times. I've learned to read them slowly. I've learned that tone matters more than content now. I remember when we used to text each other jokes in the morning. Short things, half sentences. It felt like proof that we were still a team, even when life was heavy. I don't know when that stopped. I don't know if there was a moment or if it just thinned out over time, like something leaking that you don't notice until the floor is already wet. I get dressed for work, even though my job has started to feel smaller. Or maybe I have. I wear clothes that won't draw attention. Soft colors, nothing sharp. I don't want to look like I'm doing too well. I don't want to look like I'm falling apart either. At work, I answer emails and smile at people I don't fully hear. My mind is always somewhere else, running scenarios, replaying conversations, wondering if I said too much or not enough. I didn't used to be like this. I used to speak without rehearsing. I used to assume people were listening in good faith. That assumption feels naive now, like something a younger version of me would say with confidence. By lunchtime, my chest usually feels tight, not pain, pressure, like I'm holding something in without knowing what it is. I eat at my desk so I don't have to make small talk. I don't trust myself to sound normal anymore. There are days when I almost miss him. Not the way people think missing works. It's not longing, it's muscle memory, the way you reach for a light switch that isn't there anymore. Fit, we talk about logistics now. Pickups, drop-offs, dates, times, everything has to be written down, everything has to be confirmed. I read each message like it's a contract. I don't let myself skim. Sometimes he adds a sentence that feels unnecessary, something polite, something that looks generous on the surface. Those are the ones that get under my skin. I can't explain why without sounding paranoid, so I don't explain it to anyone. I just sit with it. I've started keeping notes, nothing dramatic, just dates, phrases, little things that don't feel right, but also don't feel wrong enough to point to. I tell myself it's smart, that I'm being responsible. But there's a part of me that knows I'm doing it because I don't trust my own memory anymore. I've caught myself second-guessing things I know happened. Conversations I remember clearly suddenly feel fuzzy when I replay them. I hate that feeling more than anything. It makes me feel unstable, like the ground under me isn't solid anymore. When people ask how I'm doing, I say fine. It comes out automatically. I don't owe anyone the truth, and even if I wanted to give it, I wouldn't know where to start. In the afternoons, I check the time too often, waiting for nothing in particular. Just waiting. I've become very good at waiting. After work, I drive home slowly. I take longer routes without thinking about it. The quiet in the car feels safer than the quiet in the house. I listen to the radio, but don't hear the words. My hands grip the steering wheel tighter than they need to. At home, I go through the motions: dinner, dishes, laundry, tasks that prove I'm functioning. I keep receipts, I file paperwork, I follow rules I didn't know existed until recently. There are moments when I feel like I'm being watched, not literally. Just that sense that my life is being measured somehow, that every choice is being weighed against something I don't have access to. I replay our last real conversation sometimes, the one before everything shifted. I try to remember his face, his tone, whether there was something I missed. I don't come to any conclusions. I just circle the same thoughts until I'm tired. At night, the house feels bigger, louder, the walls creak and I jump. I check the locks twice, sometimes three times. I tell myself it's normal, that anyone would do the same. I lie in bed and scroll through my phone even though my eyes burn. I look at photos I shouldn't. Old holidays, smiles that look convincing now but felt real then. I try not to linger, but my thumb doesn't always listen. There are moments when I feel anger rise up out of nowhere, sharp and sudden. It scares me because I don't recognize it. I push it down quickly. Anger feels dangerous. Anger feels like something that could be used against me. I've learned to keep my voice even, calm, reasonable. I don't raise it, even when I want to, especially when I want to. I've learned that reacting gives things shape, and once something has shape, it can be pointed at. Some nights I rehearse conversations that haven't happened yet. What I'll say if he accuses me of something, what I'll say if he asks for more, what I'll say if he takes something away. I don't talk about this with my friends, not really. I give them edited versions, cleaner ones, stories that end neatly. I don't want to sound bitter. I don't want to sound weak. I didn't expect this part to be the hardest, not the separation, not the paperwork, this constant low-level tension, this feeling that I'm always slightly behind, even when I'm doing everything right. I used to believe that once you decided to leave, the worst was over, that there was a before and an after. I'm realizing now that there's a middle that doesn't get talked about, a place where nothing is officially broken, but nothing feels safe either. Tonight, I check my email one last time before bed. I tell myself I won't respond until morning if there's something there. I tell myself I deserve rest. There's a new message waiting, short, neutral, timestamped. I don't open it. I just stare at the screen and feel that pressure in my chest tighten, like something inside me knows what's coming before I do. I opened the email the next morning because I couldn't stand the waiting anymore. It was three sentences. He was requesting a schedule adjustment. He was concerned about stability. He wanted it documented properly. He attached a proposed calendar, like it was a favor, like he was being helpful, like he wasn't reaching into my week and rearranging my life with a neat little spreadsheet. I stared at it while my coffee cooled again. The change itself wasn't even the worst part. 2 hours earlier on Fridays, a different pickup location, a new exchange protocol, words I never thought I'd use in my own life. The worst part was that he wrote it as if it had already been agreed on. I read the message again, slower, and felt my face get hot. I started drafting a reply and deleted it. I drafted another and deleted that too. Everything sounded either too angry or too weak. I couldn't find the voice that would land in the middle and still sound like me. I sent a short response. I wrote that I wasn't available for the change and that we could discuss alternatives. I read it three times before I hit send. 2 minutes later, his lawyer replied. Not him, his lawyer. That was the first time I felt it in my body, like a drop, like the ground shifting a half inch and my feet not moving fast enough to catch it. The lawyer's email was longer, still polite, still professional, but it wasn't conversation anymore. It was position. It referenced the best interests. It referenced patterns. It referenced documentation. It didn't accuse me of anything directly. It didn't have to. It just built a shape around me and waited for me to step into it. I sat at my desk at work with my hands on the keyboard, not typing. I could hear my coworkers laughing down the hall, and it sounded like it was coming from another world. I wanted to forward it to someone and say, "Do you see this? Do you hear what he's doing?" Instead, I saved it. I renamed the file with the date. I put it in a folder I didn't tell anyone about. By lunchtime, my stomach felt hollow, like I'd been running without moving. I called my friend Megan and asked if she could talk. I didn't tell her why at first. I just needed a human voice that didn't sound like it was trying to win. She said, "Are you okay?" And I almost said yes, that old reflex that, but I didn't. I told her quietly that things were getting ugly. She asked what he did. I tried to explain. I heard myself describing an email, a calendar. The word protocol. I could hear how small it sounded out loud. I could hear how easy it would be for someone to say, "That's not a big deal." So I stopped explaining the details and told her the truth instead. I told her it felt like he was playing a game I didn't agree to. There was a pause on the line. Then she said, "You need a lawyer." I already knew that. But hearing it from someone else made it real in a new way, like I'd crossed a line just by admitting I needed help. That afternoon, I called 3 offices from my car in a grocery store parking lot. I spoke softly, like I was confessing something, like being on the phone itself could be used as evidence. 2 offices didn't call back. 1 told me their retainer amount, and I felt my throat tighten because the number sounded like a punishment. I did the math in my head. I thought about my rent, my car payment, groceries, the small savings account I'd been trying not to touch. I realized with a kind of nausea that this wasn't just emotional anymore. This was money. That night, I picked up my child from my mom's house. She had offered to help more lately. She'd been watching me with that careful look she gets when she's worried, but doesn't want to say it wrong. On the drive home, my child talked about school and a book they were reading, and I nodded at the right times, but my mind was replaying the lawyer's email over and over. When we got home, I made dinner while my child did homework at the table. I watched their small hands hold a pencil and felt something sharp in my chest. I couldn't lose time. I couldn't lose ground. I couldn't lose the ability to be present. But I also couldn't keep pretending this was normal. After my child went to bed, I opened my laptop and started reading. Court forums, divorce blogs, custody threads. I wasn't looking for advice. I was looking for pattern. I wanted to know if other women had felt this particular kind of fear. Not fear of being hurt, but fear of being outmaneuvered. Fear of being made to look like someone you're not. I read story after story until my eyes blurred. I kept seeing the same words. Document everything. Don't react. Assume everything will be used. It didn't feel like life advice. It felt like survival instructions. The next morning, another email came in. This one was from him, not the lawyer. That almost made it worse. It started with, "Hope you're doing well." I stared at that line for a long time. Then I read the rest. He wrote that he was worried about my communication style. He said he didn't want conflict, but he needed consistency. He said he'd appreciate if I could keep things civil. Civil. I could feel my heart beating in my throat, because I hadn't been uncivil. Not once. I'd been careful, controlled, polite. I'd swallowed words until my mouth felt bruised from holding them. And here he was, writing as if I was the unstable one. I wrote a reply and deleted it. I wrote another and deleted that too. I finally sent 1 line, "I'm committed to respectful communication." That was it. My hands shook after I hit send. A few days later, I got a notice from the school, a routine email about emergency contacts, updates needed. I opened the form and froze. His name was still listed first. That wasn't new. But my phone number had been moved below his work number. And the secondary contact wasn't my mother anymore. It was his sister. I stared at it like it was a typo. Then I saw the timestamp on the update. It had been changed the day before. I called the school office and tried to keep my voice even. I asked how emergency contacts get updated. The woman on the phone sounded bored in the way people sound when they've done something 100 times. She said, "One parent submitted a request." I asked which parent. She hesitated, then said she couldn't share that. My mouth went dry. I drove to the school after work and sat in the parking lot for a full minute before I went inside. I practiced what I would say. Calm, normal, reasonable. At the front desk, I asked for the administrator. I smiled. I kept my face relaxed. I could feel sweat under my arms, even though it wasn't hot. The administrator came out, and I showed her the form on my phone. I said gently that there must have been a mistake. She looked at it and said, "Oh, just that. Oh." She asked if the other parent was aware I wanted changes. I stared at her. I said, "Why would I need his permission to be listed as an emergency contact for my own child?" She blinked like she'd never been asked that. Then she said carefully, "We try to keep things consistent between households." Households, plural, like I was a separate category now. like my home was just one option among many. I asked her to change it back. She said she could, but she needed it in writing from both parents. I felt my face go numb. I said, "If one parent can change it alone, why do you need both to change it back?" She gave me a tight smile like she wanted the conversation to end. I walked back to my car with my legs trembling. I sat behind the steering wheel and stared straight ahead, breathing through my nose like I was trying not to cry in public. That was when it clicked. This wasn't only happening in emails, it was happening in small systems I didn't control. Forms, protocols, people doing what was easiest, people defaulting to the louder, more confident voice, and he was already in motion inside those systems. He had time, he had money. He had the ability to sound calm while I was still learning how to breathe. That night, I called the law office again and paid the retainer with my credit card. I sat on my living room floor after I hung up and stared at my hands. My chest felt tight, but in a different way now, not panic, focus. I told myself this was just protection. I told myself this was just paperwork. I told myself I was being smart. But underneath that, there was another truth forming. I was accepting the rules of the game. A week later, I had my first meeting with my attorney. Her office smelled like printer ink and hand sanitizer. She spoke in clean sentences. She asked for dates, documents, proof. When I showed her the emails, she nodded like she'd seen them before. She said, "He's building a narrative." I swallowed hard. I asked about what. She looked at me, then looked back at the screen. She said that you're difficult, uncooperative, unstable. My mouth went cold. I wanted to laugh because it sounded ridiculous. I wanted to tell her she had it wrong. But I didn't, because I could suddenly see it the way the emails were framed, the way he kept using words like concerned and civil and consistency, the way he pulled third parties in, the way he did things quietly and then acted like it was normal. My attorney told me not to respond to anything emotionally. She told me to keep everything in writing. She told me to assume he was saving everything. I nodded like I understood. But when I left the office, I sat in my car and cried so hard my face hurt. Not because I missed him, not because I wanted him back, because I finally understood that the person I married knew exactly where I was soft. He knew what I'd tolerate, he knew what I'd avoid, he knew what I'd be ashamed to admit out loud, and now he was using it. That evening, when I got home, there was a new message waiting. This one wasn't an email. It was a notification from the parenting app we were required to use. A formal request had been filed. He was asking for an emergency hearing. The days after the filing blurred together, but not in the way people mean when they say that. I remember everything too clearly. Every sound, every word, every small delay that made my heart race like something bad was already happening somewhere without me. The hearing wasn't scheduled right away. That was the first lesson. Nothing urgent ever feels urgent to the system unless it belongs to the right person. I kept going to work. I kept making lunches. I kept answering messages with sentences that sounded neutral, even when my hands were shaking. I learned how to hold my phone without checking it. I learned how to breathe through my nose and not my mouth. I learned how to pause before speaking, even when silence felt like surrender. The app became the center of my life. Every message lived there now. Time-stamped, preserved, permanent. I typed slower. I reread everything out loud before sending it, listening for tone like I was diffusing something fragile. I stopped explaining myself. That surprised me. I used to explain everything, why I was late, why I needed a change, why something felt wrong. I thought clarity would protect me. I thought being reasonable would matter. Now I wrote the bare minimum. Yes, no, I'm unavailable. That doesn't work for me. Each short sentence felt like stepping onto ice and not knowing if it would crack. At night, after my child went to bed, I sat at the kitchen table with papers spread out like a quiet confession. Bank statements, calendars, school emails, things that proved I existed in a consistent way. I started seeing my life as evidence. I hated that. My attorney called to prep me for the hearing. She used calm language. She told me what to expect. She told me not to take it personally. I didn't tell her that everything about this felt personal. I didn't tell her that I felt like I was being studied from the inside out. The hearing happened over video. I sat in my bedroom with the door closed, laptop balanced on a stack of books. I wore a plain sweater. I brushed my hair twice. I didn't wear makeup because I didn't want to look emotional, but I didn't want to look careless either. I watched my own face in the corner of the screen like it belonged to someone else. He appeared on the screen looking calm, comfortable, familiar in a way that made my stomach turn. He nodded politely when the judge spoke. He kept his voice even. When it was my turn to speak, my throat tightened. I answered the questions that were asked. I didn't volunteer anything. I didn't react when he said things that weren't true. I watched the judge's face instead, trying to read meaning into expressions that didn't belong to me. The hearing ended without resolution. That was another lesson. Afterward, I sat on the edge of my bed and stared at the wall. I didn't cry right away. I felt hollow, like the adrenaline had drained out of me and left nothing behind. Later that night, I cried in the shower so my child wouldn't hear me. Things didn't get worse all at once. They spread out, quietly, like something leaking behind the walls. Schedules changed, then changed back. Requests came in with short deadlines, then reminders, then notes about my lack of response when I didn't reply fast enough. I started setting alarms just to check the app. I told myself it was temporary. I told myself I was being vigilant. I wasn't sleeping much. My body stayed tense even when nothing was happening. I flinched at notifications. I jumped when my phone buzzed. I learned the difference between the sound of an email and the sound of the app without thinking about it. Friends asked how things were going, and I said fine, because it was easier than explaining something that didn't have a clean shape. My mother watched me more closely now. She didn't ask many questions. She made extra food and sent leftovers home with me. She hugged me longer than usual. I didn't tell her everything. I didn't want her to worry. I didn't want her to see how small my world had become. At school pickup, I noticed things I hadn't before. The way administrators spoke to him versus how they spoke to me. The way he stood like he belonged everywhere he went. Once, I corrected a mistake on a form and the secretary said we'll need to confirm that with him. I nodded and thanked her. I sat in my car afterward and stared at my hands on the steering wheel until they stopped shaking. I stopped expecting fairness. That was another shift. Instead, I focused on predictability. What I could control, what I could document, what I could let go. I stopped reacting when he used words like concern and confusion. I stopped defending myself against things that hadn't been said out loud. That didn't mean it hurt less. It just meant I was tired. There were moments when I missed the version of myself who assumed goodwill, the version of me who didn't rehearse conversations, the version of me who thought love ending meant conflict ending too. I didn't recognize her anymore. Over time, the hearing spaced out. The messages slowed, not because things were resolved, but because patterns had been established. I understood the rhythm now, when to expect pressure, when to expect silence, when something would be framed as cooperation, and when it would be framed as failure. That knowledge settled into me like weight. Some days felt almost normal. I cooked dinner, I laughed with my child, I folded laundry while listening to music. I let myself believe that maybe this was just life now. Then a message would come through and my chest would tighten all over again. I noticed changes in myself that I didn't talk about. How I chose my words carefully, even with people who loved me. How I scanned rooms for exits. How I avoided situations where I might be misunderstood. I became very good at disappearing in plain sight. I didn't feel victorious. I didn't feel defeated either. I felt altered. The legal process kept moving in its slow and different way. Agreements were drafted, then revised, then questioned. Nothing ever felt final. One night, months later, after everything had quieted for the day, I sat on my bed scrolling through old photos on my phone. Not because I wanted to remember him, because I wanted to remember myself. I found a picture from years ago. I was smiling in a way that reached my eyes. My shoulders looked relaxed. My body looked like it trusted the world. I stared at that image longer than I meant to. I didn't feel sad exactly. I felt something like distance. I closed the app and set my phone face down on the nightstand. The house was quiet, the kind of quiet that doesn't ask anything of you. I lay there and let my mind wander without trying to fix it. I let myself feel tired without calling it weakness. I don't know how this ends. I don't know what parts of this will stay with me and what parts will fade. I know that I'm still here, still standing, still moving forward in ways that don't announce themselves. I know that the person who knows me best no longer loves me. And I know that I learned how to survive someone who did.